accession number 20293, reel 2.
And he goes A-rail 2.
We battled on, we got into Venray, and eventually the Germans wanted that place, so we had to bombard or take the bombardment from the Germans, which was very heavy indeed. I don't know what the Germans were after in Venray, but it was a final point where they were concerned, because after that, they were nearly into Germany. Venray being the last place in Holland where we were concerned before we entered Germany. And once you got into Germany, I found the Germans were very strict in trying to retain their own ground. Eventually, we carried on and we captured Venray, but after coming out of the line, what we call coming out of the line for a rest, we stayed in Venray and we had to stay in the slit trenches that we had already dug and covered over with doors from the buildings that had been bombed. We didn't have no actual rest. We carried on through Venray after it had been captured. Well, after we captured it, anyway. And the next job was Gok. Now, that is in Germany. I believe we got reinforcements just before we left Venray, because we'd lost a few chaps in Venray. And Gok was the next battle scene. Now, Gok was a very nice place, but there was so much going on, and as I say, you were already in Germany. So you had to stand your ground as much as possible. And from there, we carried on to a bridge over the Mühlenfluss at Wieser, I think it was. Wiesel. And this bridge had to be held from the Germans. We had to capture the bridge, and we found out it was already mined and detonated, ready to blow up if we got near. Eventually, with the other companies, we went forward, and that area took us 3 days and three nights to capture the bridge fully without it being blown up. Eventually, the divisional commander, Bolo Whistler, he renamed the bridge Yorkshire Bridge, and that is a monument for the regiment. And after that, we went carried on over the bridge into Schadenhof. Now, this place was well German occupied, and he had so much artillery and tanks in Schadenhof. When we finally got into Schadenhof, besides the other little villages, he let go. And we were chased round farmhouses in Schadenhof by the Tiger tanks, which were firing 88s. We managed to dodge a few, but we had quite a few casualties, because wherever we went, we were being fired on from every angle. Schadenhof, I don't know what that was, the reason for that. But you had other villages around that area that we also had to capture. Eventually, we captured them after 3 days and three nights. We got withdrawn from the area by the 43rd Wessex Division. We came out of the line, and then Monty was such a driver that you came out the line for so many hours or days, but you were forced back into the line to keep the gap closed and press on. To me, to be fair to me and my other comrades, Monty was a slave driver, because he wanted to get there first. Whatever happened, He drove and drove and drove. Many a time we'd been out about 5 or 6 hours, and we were put back in a line in the battle zone in a different area just to keep the gap, close the gap all the time. After that, we went back into Enschede. We had 4 or 5 days there rest to Enschede, in Enschede, where we met the local people because we'd already been in Enschede. And then after that, we went through to Nordhorn, which was close on the River Rhine. Now, our battalion expected to be in the battle to cross the Rhine. Now, if I can remember, we were more or less in reserve, even though we were in Nordhorn and Lingden, that was very close to the River Rhine. But eventually, we were held back while other other divisions went forward and crossed the Rhine. Eventually, our turn came to cross the Rhine. And I can remember crossing over on the Bailey Bridge that the Royal Engineers had built across, because all the bridges were blown across the Rhine. We eventually landed in Rees, and from there we battled on up to Bassum, which was in Germany. Well, it's all Germany now. We went in through Bassum. It's a little village, but the mines were on the grass verges, so we had to call the engineers out to detect where the mines were. After that, they held us up for a while before we could get to the next village, which was Brinkham, and the same was happening there, so we called the engineers out again, and we eventually got through to Heligen Road, which was near Delmenhorst. Now, Delmenhorst, let's go back to Heligrode. That was a little village, but very small. But we had to pass through that to get to Delmenhorst. Now, Delmenhorst was a military place, hospital. It was a hospital for the German people, troops, etc. But we had battles at Delmenhorst, and eventually we got through, and it was planned to take on Bremen. Now, eventually, instructions were given for the Battle of Bremen. So many regiments in the division were given their orders as much as we were, and we battled out for Bremen. We had the task of walking through fields which were wet, but eventually we got into Bremen after a noisy battle. There again, the Germans were on their own property and they wanted to hold it as long as possible. But we eventually captured Bremen and we stayed there about 3 days after. And then we carried on as troops. Occupational troops. We were there for about a month, and then we got instructions that the division, the whole division, was moving out to the Middle East, to Palestine. It was known as Palestine at the time, and Egypt. And Egypt, we was in Ismailia, which was a nice place, and we done a tour from Egypt and into Palestine at different intervals. The main thing was to stop any, coming over from Cyprus to Haifa. Illegal immigrants. But at the same time, we had to be very careful because while we was at Haifa, the Stern Gang, which was well known in that area, done many things trying to get into Haifa, but there again we were there to stop them. But anybody coming into Haifa was searched and checked. And naturally, we had the military police doing that job while we were guarding the area. Back into Ismailia, we'd done various trips along there, going to Talakabia, various places around there. Eventually, while we was in Egypt, I got leave and I went to Beirut for a week's holiday along with some chums. And it worked out all right. When we come back, I was promoted to corporal, full corporal, but I entered my service at the end of my service. I wasn't qualified for the full rank. I had to have 90 days as a corporal, but I didn't. I was asked to stay on, but my parents were elderly at the time, and I said, no, I'll go back and get demobbed in the normal way. And eventually, I got demobbed. But before I got demobbed, I went from B Company to HQ Company, accepting the position of post corporal. I'd run that job, or I had that job, about 9 months, on and off, up into Palestine and West Ham. I used to go, when we was in Haifa, used to go down Kingsway to the RE's mailing unit, collect the mail, come back, sort it all out for the companies, notify the companies, they come and pick their mail up. And the same happened in Egypt. But eventually, my time came along that I got demobbed. If I'd have stayed on another 6 weeks, I'd have been a full NCO. And then within a few weeks after that, I'd have been made sergeant. But as I said, I had elderly parents. I hadn't seen them for some time. So I decided just to pack up and get demobbed. So I went in as a private and I came out as a private.
Can you tell me more about the work that you did against the illegal immigrants, please?
Well, the illegal ones, when they came over, they were searched by the military police. But by their okays, we had to let them in if they passed the military police. They checked them, searched them, and if they give you the thumbs up, you let them through. Either they lived where they were in Haifa, had been to Cyprus, because they were coming from Cyprus into Haifa. But without our knowledge, we had to wait and see what the MPs were doing. We call them the MPs. We didn't like them.
Why not?
They were very strict to us troops. Very strict.
In what way?
And a bully type. You've got the bully type sometimes. So you had to be careful what you say.
What were they particularly strict about?
Either your dress or where you're going. You shouldn't be here and all this. So, you know, we had to be very careful ourselves. You asked anybody about the military police, they'll soon tell you.
How do you feel now about having served in the East Yorkshires in the war?
Well, I'm very pleased because I've learned a lot over the years and they were good comrades and we still carry on the comradeship now from this day onwards. In fact, there's so many of them that joined the battalion at Venray that they never had a branch when they came out of the services. So they formed their own veterans group. And there's about 38 of us who keep in touch all the time by letter, by phone. And we just recently had a reunion in Bridlington in Yorkshire for 5 days. And meeting old friends and their wives, obvious. We had a service. We have a regimental chapel in Beverley Minster. And on the Sunday, we go to Beverley Minster and pray to our fallen friends and have a service there. After that, we go to a hotel in Beverly and have a snack and a drink. And then we go back to Bridlington and we carry on from there, either with a dinner, which you was laid on, but you didn't want much because you'd already eaten at the hotel in Beverly. However, after that, we'd talk to each other with a drink in our hand, making plans for whatever we could do to help each other.
Going back to the beginning of the war, did you see anything of the Blitz in the East End?
Yes, I was living in London at the time when the Blitz came over.
What was your...
I lived near the docks. West Ham is near the docks, part of the docks, and which got bombed pretty heavy, the docks.
What was your address at that time?
Still Road, which is not there now, obvious. Still Road, West Ham.
Can you describe what the bombing was like there?
Yes, you had the bombs dropping and you had the... what do they call them? Ones that light up.
Incendiaries.
You had incendiaries. And in our area where I lived, they used to have a mobile gun going round the streets, firing as much as they could. But it was down to them, obviously. Must have been Royal Artillery. But there was so much damage done in that area, or in my area. There's so many casualties. We used to help as much as we could, clearing the wreckage. Bits of this, bits of wood, anything to get to the people if we thought were under there. Because at that time, there was no infrared cameras or anything like that. The battle for London was all lit up, as we know, and we could see that from where I was living. We could see London burning, so much flames. And that, although there's been documentaries on that and films, it really brought it home to you that you were more lucky to be alive, living about, 6 miles away from London itself, the centre. But we'd had enough damage around our area because of the docks.
Did you use shelters?
There were shelters we could go to. Mostly in the park. We had a park near us and they had the proper brick shelters that you would go down into. I used to take Mum and Dad down there and sit down in there and you could be in there all night long. In fact, you'd probably come out and you go back within 3 or 4 hours back into the shelter again and you got to know the people. But when it got more heavier, funny enough, Leighton Station, they closed Leighton Station, or Underground Station, and Stratford Underground Station, and used the tunnel for bunk beds for us to sleep in of the night because the damage on London was so fierce that we had to go down steps either end of the tunnel to sleep overnight. Or get away from the damage of the air.
What were conditions like in the tube tunnel?
Pretty rough. I mean, it's a long tunnel, and beds were made up on the wall, like they do in boats, you know, submarines and that, to it up. And you slept on them, or you slept on the floor. I know further in London they used to sleep on the underground stations, but that didn't come to us. We went down into these shelters, the tube tunnels actually, and if you were lucky enough, you had a bed up high or you slept on the floor. And because you've got people walking about over you here and there, you took meals with you the best you could. You took tea, made tea. As soon as you heard the air raid warning, you made tea and put them in the thermos flask, and down you went. And you stayed there till it was all clear. Then you all come out again.
What food could you take down?
Whatever you could, bit of bread, whatever you had left, your ration, because you were rationed, obvious. But you had something anyway.
Were there toilet facilities down
there? There's toilet facilities down there, but mostly it was near the entrance of the tunnels. So you had a little walk if you wanted to go to the toilet. Everything was laid on, electric light, you've got all that. But as I say, you had to go to the end of the tunnels if you wanted a toilet.
Did people quarrel with each other or not?
Yeah, it was a bit of argy-bargy now and again, which is expected. I mean, some people, oh, this so-and-so, so-and-so, that's mine, so-and-so, I was here first and all that. But you got over that. You just took no notice. You either ignored them and carried on, or you moved a bit further where you thought you'd be better off. But other than that, no. To me, everything was an experience. I mean, I often get asked now, how come the Londoner went in the Yorkshire Regiment? So I said, well, they mixed them all up. I said, but me, where I'm concerned, I made the number up. But we had Londoners, we had people from Birmingham, we had the Welsh, we had the Scottish. We had a mixture in the regiment or in the battalion. You had to.
During the Blitz, were you frightened?
Yeah, obvious. I was, what, 17? Yeah, 16, 17. Yeah. Yeah, you see the flashes of the incendiaries when they're dropping down and lighting up and that. Yep, I can remember that. I was more frightened when I was down at hog picking because we were out in the open all the time and any shrapnel or anything like that could come down. But we got away with it.
How did public morale stand up in West Ham in the Blitz?
Pretty good, pretty good. They done well. Quite a few casualties. I can't say offhand how many, but there was quite a few casualties. Because, naturally, the docks wasn't far away from us. And if you missed the docks, naturally, the civilians got it. Or the streets around the docks.
Was there any hatred of the German air crews who were carrying out the bombing?
Well, I suppose it was, yeah. In people's minds, they may not have come out with it. But, yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, it's only natural, I suppose.
Did you think they might win the war?
Well, studying, going through different battles, at the time, I'd say yes, because their equipment was well in advance of ours. And they were good troops, I must say that. But eventually, I think the weakened part came as soon as we entered Germany. And cross the Rhine. I think that's what done it. I think the battle turned then. Once we got into Germany itself, I think things changed. Where the Germans?
During the early part of the war, did you listen to the wireless?
No. Never had the wireless on at all.
Why not?
Not to my knowledge. I don't know. Just one of those things. We never even thought about it.
So you didn't hear speeches at the time?
No speeches. Only Chamberlain, when he first died, right?